The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, y'all.
Hey.
Welcome to Oh Snapped. Episode 8. Season 1.
Season 1, episode 8.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
We finally got there, but here we are.
Here we are. This one is Joyce LeMay Cohen.
Mm-hmm. This one's an interesting one, though, because we actually get commentary from the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Joyce is actually interviewed for it, so.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is. All right, well, you know, shall we just jump right into it?
I think we shall.
Okay, let's do it.
For glamorous Joyce Cohen, every day was party day.
She had expensive jewelry, 5 or 6 fur coats.
Her husband was a multi-millionaire Miami builder.
Stan was Joyce's prince.
She had a coral rock mansion in Coconut Grove, a Jaguar XK, and her own private jet.
My life with Stan, a lot of stories say it was a Cinderella story. And it was great.
But when someone crashed Cinderella's party, Joyce's world shattered. Greed, drugs, jealousy, and murder. Next on Snapped.
So.
Okay, so.
As in every episode thus far, mm-hmm. pretty much seems like, Joyce Cohen had it all. She had a husband who was a multi-million dollar contractor. She was beautiful. She had friends. She had, like, expensive taste and style. She lived in this, well, and her husband lived in this, like, luxury mansion, and it was, like, perched on a hill or a bluff or something?
Yes, overlooking Biscayne Bay.
Yeah, and it was, like, a coral mansion.
Yes, it was made out of, like, pieces of coral from the coral reef.
I mean,
it's like King Triton willed it into existence.
It just rose up out of the sea.
Yes.
Yeah, totally did.
Yes.
Lightning and everything.
I know.
She was A-list at Miami's hottest nightclubs. She was going out all the time. She was, like, totally living it up, especially in Miami.
Oh, yeah. Bienvenido a Miami.
Exactly. But she didn't start out that way.
I grew up in about 27 foster families. I was in St. Vincent's Orphanage in Freeport, Illinois when I was little. I got shifted from relative to relative for a while.
She also said that she was abused as a child. Did they specify what type of abuse she said?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. They just said abused as a child. And Dr. Diana Falkenbach said that, obviously, there were scars from her being bounced around from family to family, you know, and she's like, as a child, it makes you feel like you're not good enough for a family to hold on to. Like, nobody loves me enough. They don't want to keep me.
It's so sad.
It is sad. And I don't know, like, I think sometimes children get taken from a, like, moved to a different foster home.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of procedural things? Like, I don't know if it's always, like, the family is like, okay, I'm done with this.
Right. I have no idea, but the extent of my knowledge of foster care is limited to some, like, I know of a woman who adopted her grandson, but before she adopted him, he was in foster care. And then also movies. And I feel like a lot of times from the movie that I saw, so specifically White Oleander, if you have not seen it or read the book, this girl, her mother, played by Michelle Pfeiffer, gets, she shoots her boyfriend and kills him. And so then she's going to jail, right? So then she gets taken, the daughter gets taken away, Astrid. And she's like bounced around from foster care to foster care. But it's because she doesn't get along with whoever she's with, or one of the people commits suicide. You know, it's crazy.
Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's,
I know.
It's horrible.
It's the saddest book and the saddest movie. And I've done both of them and I would do it all over again.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Glutton for punishment.
Apparently.
Yeah. That's so sad.
It's awful.
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely, you know, see how that's going to create some
abandonment issues.
Yeah, some definite, like, emotional issues as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
She got married really young, and she later got divorced, and then she moved to Miami. She started out writing mortgages at a construction project in Broward County, and then that's where she meets wealthy builder Stan Cohen. He had one heck of a fro.
Yes, he did.
It was like that 70s, just Mr. Carter.
Curly, fluffy fro.
Yes, it was so big.
It was huge.
It was like Bob Ross had nothing on it.
I know. You know why it was so big? It was secrets? Full of secrets. Yes.
Yeah.
So they had family friends, Skip and Shoe Sampson. Whose name is Shoe? I have questions. What's it short for? But anyway.
Yeah.
Skip was like, Stan was the major partner at SAC Construction. And SAC is for Stanley A. Cohen.
Yeah, and they called it SAC.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I should have said it like SAC, because that's what they say.
Yeah, because at first I was thinking, like, he was doing a play on, like, Saks Fifth Avenue or whatever.
Oh, that would have, yeah, that would have been better, maybe.
Yeah, but it was just SAC.
Like, SAC up. Nut up or shut up.
Oh. I was like, what's SAC up?
Check your SAC. Too much. Okay, let's move on.
Family jewels. Okay. So, had to get one in there. Stan's business partner, Marvin Sheldon, said that Stan was a wonderful businessman. He was highly respected, extremely organized, always did business, like, honest way, all those things. And Stan was 17 years older than Joyce.
So Shoe Sampson, Skip's wife, I'm guessing.
Yeah, what is Shoe short for?
What could it be short for?
Shushin?
Yes. Here's my wife, Shushin. But she goes by Shoe. I would too if that was my name.
Hey, my name is Shushin. You can call me Shoe.
I don't understand it.
And if it's like a, I don't know, family or cultural name, like, we're not making fun of it because of that. It's just...
Just have never heard that before.
Yeah, we've never heard of it.
Yes. Unless it's one of those things where it's like, Hank is short for Henry. Maybe it's like, Shoe is short for Marcia.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Or, What if it's one of those things where, like, when she was little, her little sister couldn't say
Susan.
Susan. Yeah. So the little sister was like, Shoe. And then it just stuck.
Yes.
Because that happens.
It totally does. Like, not the same thing at all. Actually, I'm changing the subject completely. But I would love to be called, like, Birdie whenever I get older. We've discussed this before. I don't know why. I have no reason to, but I need somebody to start calling me Birdie right now. That way it'll stick. And then later on, it'll be like, oh, there's Aunt Birdie. I can't just give myself that nickname, you know what I mean?
That's pretty lame. You cannot give your own self a nickname.
I know.
I was on board and then I wasn't. I don't know.
With
I was like
Aunt Birdie.
Yeah. I was like, I could call you Birdie, and then I was like, no, I don't think I can.
How about Kitty?
You have a list of names. Okay.
I've got some things that you can choose from if you want. That's fine with me.
Okay. Well, all right.
Let's move on.
Larry Bird.
Oh. Shoe said that Joyce saw Stan as security and that he really seemed to love her.
They meet they fell in love, and then 6 months later, they eloped to Las Vegas. And Stan completely spoiled her. He took her everywhere in, like, private jets. He had expensive cars.
He had a house made out of coral reefs.
Literal coral reef.
Yeah, exactly.
He had a house made by King Triton himself.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
So Miami at that time was a scary place. Drugs, home invasions, and murders were up. Mm-hmm. And apparently the drug of choice for that time was cocaine.
Oh, yeah. The big coke boom.
Yeah. Why didn't they talk about it in Golden Girls? This is around the time.
Yeah, that's true. Interesting. I mean, they watched a lot of Miami Vice.
True.
But they didn't talk about it.
I mean, true.
That's weird. Yeah. Because it definitely was happening, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They put in a high-tech alarm to, you know, because these home invasions are happening all over. They're happening even in these, like, wealthy neighborhoods.
King Triton can't be around to survey.
Surveil?
Surveil the home. He's busy.
Yeah, yeah, his pitchfork thing only goes so far. It's a Triton. Oh. I see why he's... Okay. It's a Triton?
It's called a Triton.
Okay. I didn't know. I thought it was a pitchfork.
Well, now you know.
That sounds not as good. But yeah, so they got... The narrator was like, they got a high-tech alarm and... Or like a high-tech security alarm and then a low-tech Doberman. Named Mischief.
Yes.
Like, okay. But Mischief was one of those dogs that was like super duper scary.
Oh, yeah.
And would literally eat your face off if you weren't part of the family. But they said that like when you pull in the driveway, Mischief would go crazy. And then once, was it a girl or a boy?
It was a girl.
Okay. Once she realized, you know, that it was you, like she knew you or whatever, she was a sweet dog. But if she didn't know you, like...
She'd tear you up.
Yeah, you were done for. So Stan had kids from a previous marriage.
The names.
Gary and Jerry.
Gary and Jerry. It doesn't make me happy.
Mm-mm.
I'm not someone that loves, like, matchy-matchy. It's literally, like, one letter different.
Yeah. And...
Like, Phil and Lil. Like, I don't...
Yeah. So Gary is his son, and Jerry is his daughter. Yes. So it's G-E-R-I. And like when they said Gary and Jerry, I was like, oh, okay. Two boys. I wasn't thinking of the spelling. And then I was like, a son and a daughter. And I'm like, what? And then I finally figured out.
I actually think that I typed this wrong. I think it's J-E-R-I.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally different spelling.
Well, anyway.
But yeah, both of them did not like having a stepmother who was young enough to be their sister.
Yeah.
And especially Jerry. She was not about it because she felt like, which I've heard of happening a lot, she felt like she had to work against Joyce to get her dad's attention. Like, she mm-hmm. felt like he was paying more attention to Joyce and it didn't sit well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also she was like, he's my dad. That's gross. He's old.
Yeah.
So you're very young. Obviously, the only reason you want to be with him is for his money. You can't possibly be attracted to him.
Well, he had a really sick bro, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, I get that, like, it's your dad and you're clearly not attracted to him, but look at the fro.
Yeah. Other people can find that fro attractive.
Like, you have to remove your personal feelings and just behold the fro.
Exactly.
And understand that other women are going to be into it.
Yeah. And he can't help that. So they spent a ton of time in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. They were like skiing all over the place, like shh, ksh, ksh.
Oh, yeah. Some
shoop.
Thick powder.
Shoop. Shoop.
Maybe from that's Friends. What she was short for.
Skiing. She was shooping.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I didn't know that.
They're like, she really likes to ski.
We're going to call her Shoe.
Yeah.
Short for Shoopin.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they were like always on the trail? No.
On the hills?
No.
On the
lifts?
Yeah, you
okay,
you,
okay.
You a lift, yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So they're always out there on the lifts.
Yeah.
Shooping around.
And they loved it so much that they decided to build a vacation ranch just outside of Steamboat Springs in a place called Wolf Run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's where Joyce... Okay, so they said that when Joyce met Stan, she was this, like, mild, meek, timid kind of girl. And they go out to Steamboat Springs, and she becomes this, like, wealthy woman.
That, she's, like, dresses impeccably.
Yeah, she's confident.
Chic.
Yeah. She's got, like, all these fur coats.
Oh, yeah.
She's, like, loving it up there.
Yes.
But she was partying all the time. That's where she really, really got into the party scene. And Stan was hearing that she was doing a lot of drugs. And he didn't like that.
No, I can understand that.
Sure. So he was like, I have a great idea. I bought a restaurant called
Buccioni's.
Buccioni's. And I want you to run it, and it's here in Miami. And she was like, okay, cool.
He made her an offer. She couldn't refuse.
Yeah. So she comes back to Miami, because he was spending a lot of time in Miami.
He has business. And, yeah.
He built that as a vacation home, and she was just staying there all the time.
A lot of time.
Yeah. So he was going more back and forth, and he wanted her to come back with him. Mm-hmm. So he buys this restaurant. She is running it, and everybody is like, you know, she did really well with that. She was a great hostess, and she always dressed really nice. And so you go to this restaurant, and you have beautiful Joyce, like, greeting you, and she looks really nice, and she's always dressed so well, and she was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. But then, the early morning hours of March 7th, 1986, Nelson
Andrew,
former Miami police lieutenant, explains that there was a frantic call from Joyce saying her husband had been shot. And he said that it was a frantic, bloody scene. And he said that Stan had been shot 4 times in the back of the head.
That's a lot of times for the back of the head.
It's excessive.
Yeah, that's like, you're 100% making sure this person has died.
Yeah, I think the one would probably cut it. Although you do hear about, when we talked about the Columbine episode, that kid totally lived.
Mm-hmm. Or like 50 Cent.
Right? How many times?
He got shot in the face like 9 times.
It's insane. Yeah. Wow. But yeah, 4, that's a ton of times to be shot in the back of the head.
I would say, yeah.
So Stan did not survive this.
Mm-mm.
And when they got there, they thought that it was a home invasion. The front glass door had been shattered, but there was nothing missing from the home.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, okay, we're going to talk to Joyce about this and see what she has to say. And she confirmed it was a home invasion gone wrong. She says she was sorting clothes for a rummage sale, which I'm guessing is like a yard sale. We call them yard sales here. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd never heard it as a rummage sale.
I've heard it on Golden Girls, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Maybe so it's a Miami thing.
Yeah, like a Miami thing. Because I guess what, you're rummaging through?
Yes.
One man's trash is another man's treasure.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
But yeah, on Golden Girls, Blanche accidentally gave Rose's favorite teddy bear away.
Oh, no.
And this little girl from the Sunshine Cadets or whatever.
I remember.
Remember? This. She's like, no, you're not getting him back. And then she like totally holds him for ransom and stuff. It's insane. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's neither here nor there.
Yeah. She was a little turd.
Yes. So she said that she's not rummaging. She is sorting clothes for the rummage sale, and she heard a noise in the driveway. So she tells Stan. Stan goes and gets a gun out of a drawer. He goes outside. He comes back in because he's like, I don't see anything. I think everything's fine. He put the gun on the nightstand and went to bed. But Joyce stayed up for many hours later, and she heard the broken glass. And this is around 5:30 a.m.
Yeah, I was like...
She stayed up until well past 5:30 a.m.
Why are you awake all night getting ready for a rummage sale?
Do you know what could help you stay up that late? Drugs.
Mm-hmm. You're going to want to do a lot of coke.
It's going to keep you going.
I mean, yeah, maybe she just couldn't sleep because she was doing so much drugs. I don't know. But yeah, it's like, why?
What is... The rummage sale cannot be that pressing that you have to stay up till 5:30.
And she doesn't say specifically what time she thinks she hears this noise, and then later she hears
the broken glass.
The broken glass, but it just says hours later. So like, if this is like 11 or 12, I mean, now you've just stayed up till it's the next day. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Six whole hours later.
It's very weird. Yeah.
So she said that she went to her husband, or she tried to go to her husband, and she saw the back of someone, and they take off running, and she heard someone, it sounded like they said, "Let's get the F out of here," mm-hmm. and they ran away.
And at first, the cops believed her. They were like, I mean, sounds about right. There's a lot of home invasions around here. Sure, whatever. But then the more they talked to her, the more they found some holes in her story.
There were some discrepancies.
Yeah. And when she realized that she was a suspect, she got super angry and defensive and told everyone to get out of her mansion. And I did not know that this was possible, but even the coroner had to leave Stan's body there. And they had to go and get a search warrant.
While detectives went to get a search warrant, the crime squad was shut out of the mansion. The coroner even had to leave Stan's body behind.
So the police have to get a search warrant, and Stanley Cohen lays dead on the floor on his back for 7 hours before the police can get back into the house.
But I was like, do you have to get a search warrant to just respond to, like, she called 911, so, and now you've found a dead body. Like, you have to have a search warrant to come in and retrieve the dead body?
Well, wouldn't that be tampering with evidence or, like,
you would think.
Withholding, isn't there a law like withholding a dead body or something, you know?
Like, yeah, like maybe. But I mean, I guess if you're going to go in and get the body, you're going to want to take pictures of the crime scene and all that. But yeah, I don't know. I had never heard of this happening before.
Yeah, I was shocked that she was able to be like, you guys need to get the HE double hockey sticks out of here. And they did.
And they did, yeah. And they were like, okay, well, I guess we'll come back with a search warrant. And it was
8 hours later.
Yeah. So he's there laying on his back, dead in my, I mean, I'm sure they had, you know, air conditioning or whatever, but still.
In Miami.
Yeah, it's hot. Like, there's so many things that you lose. And time of death comes in later, plays a big role in this. And you cannot accurately get the time of death. The longer it goes, the harder that is. It's hard to get an accurate time of death anyway.
Yeah, you have this window of time, right?
But yeah. And it's the longer it goes, like, because initially, like, when the paramedics get there, the coroner or whatever, they usually will take the temperature of the body. And that kind of gives them an idea about how long they've been dead. But then you go 7 or 8 hours later, now you've got other factors, like how hot it is that day. Are they running the air conditioning? Is there a fan on in the room? He's laying on the floor versus on a mattress. Like, all these things, it just jacks up the time of death.
Absolutely.
And obviously, like, clues and stuff. She could be doing anything in the house for 7 hours.
Cleaning.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so before they could get the search warrant, they decided to look around the outside of the house because they didn't need a search warrant for that. Mm-hmm. And they find a 38 caliber revolver in the bushes outside of their house in the front yard. And this revolver has been wiped completely clean. It did belong to Stan, but they didn't have any fingerprints or anything on it. But they did notice that there was a piece of tissue between where you would, like, cock the gun to fire it. So what, the hammer of it? I don't know gun terms.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
Okay. So in between the gun itself and the hammer where you cock it back to shoot the gun.
Yeah.
And it's just this little piece of tissue. So they're like, okay, well, here's the clue.
Well, but the way they described it, they called it tissue paper.
Right.
So in my mind, I'm thinking like
wrapping.
Yeah, like birthday purposes. Or Christmas wrapping, like tissue paper. But then they said that when they got back in the house, they found their first thing that they wanted to look for was to find tissue that matched this. In the garbage can in the bathroom, there was a tissue in the garbage. And it had mucus from Joy on it.
Joyce.
What did I say?
Joy.
I did? God,
What is it like to be inside of your head and not know anything that comes out of your mouth?
It's really just it's a gamble. I'm like, I hope I'm saying words. I don't know. So weird. I definitely thought I said Joyce. And particles, they said, that might have been blowback from the gun. Was it or was it not?
How do you, I mean, yeah.
Was it or was it not? And did this tissue have a tear in it exactly where, you know, like where this other piece would have come from? They don't say anything about it's missing a little piece.
Mm-mm.
You're going to know if a tissue, a Kleenex, has a rip in it or not.
Right.
Like, does it or does it not? I don't know. It was very strange. I don't know. It was very strange. They also found that the Doberman had been locked up. That's suspicious.
Right.
And the alarm had been turned off. Okay. So who could have done that?
I would say Joy.
Tori, you're being rude. Her name is Joyce. But also, well, I don't know. Do they ever say if the gun that they found was the one that shot him?
I have no idea. They never said it.
They never say that. So I don't know what if that ended up being the gun or not. But if it was, like, why would you throw the gun out the window, first of all? But if it was the gun that shot him, you know, and somebody's going to go there to do a home invasion and they're not going to bring a weapon, they're going to so happen to pass by her wherever she is, go to just the bedroom. She doesn't see them or anything. I mean, it's a huge house. I get that. But they're going to go to the bedroom and find that gun on the nightstand and use it and then wipe it down and throw it out the window and then leave.
But if it's such a big house, like, let's go with that theory. I know it is. We saw pictures of it. It's huge. But she heard the glass breaking in the front. Like, she heard the crime happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, not that these things are not loud and that you can't, it's not echoey, drafty, whatever, I don't know, but it's like, I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense. And also, I feel like this is reminiscent of, we covered Phil Vasili on Killer Queens, and it's like, well, who would have known where to turn the security camera off?
Right.
At the exact moment that a murder takes place.
Yeah, exactly. Who had access to this incredibly well secured home and neighborhood?
Yes. And who knew the dog mischief well enough to not get ripped to smithereens to put her up?
Like, mm-hmm.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So if somebody else did come in and shoot Stan and the dog is up, why is the dog up? Because everybody who talked about the dog is always like, every time you pull in the driveway, mischief is going crazy. It doesn't sound like this dog is ever put away. So, yeah.
Well, why would you get a dog specifically for protection purposes just to lock it up at night when you would need her the most?
Yeah, when home invasions are most prevalent.
Right.
Exactly. Also, I wonder if she actually put the gun on the nightstand for the person, you know?
Mm-hmm. Because this is all her word. Nobody knows for sure.
Yeah, because it's weird that he would just leave it on the nightstand. I don't know. Maybe it's not, but
it's interesting.
Yeah, because he got it from inside the nightstand, so why not just put it back in there?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But police then look into Joy's private life. Joy's! I did it too! You! I blame you. Police look into Joyce's private life. I'm so sorry. And find out that Joyce had a cocaine problem, which we danced around or maybe even just said out loud earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that drug use, Stan was threatening her with divorce.
Yeah. Because it wasn't just like
a bump here and there.
Yeah. I mean, and like, not that that's, you know, healthy, but it wasn't like she was just doing it
recreationally.
Yeah. Or socially, I guess. Like, she was going through so much money. She was straight up hooked on it and was like, you know, this guy has a house made out of coral reef. We cannot stress that enough. And she was like blowing through all his money.
It's ridiculous. And I feel like, I mean, I don't know much about drugs. I don't know hardly anything. I have to like Google all kinds of stuff. And I'm always worried that I'm going to get red flagged by the government. But although, as we've said in other episodes, if I'm Googling it, I'm pretty sure the government's not going to be like, oh, she's obviously a drug addict, because drug addicts probably don't have to Google this kind of stuff. But
that's true.
I've heard that cocaine is a heck of a drug, and that I'm sure they're all highly addictive, but that one's pretty, like, kind of close to the top. Like,
Yeah, I think that and heroin, it's like you try it one time and that's it. A guy that I went to school with, his dad came and talked to us in high school about, like, don't do drugs, kids. And his problem was cocaine. And he said that, like, he did it the one time and fell in love with it. But every single time he did it after that, he was just trying to achieve
that same first.
Yeah, the feeling he had the first time. And you can never do that again because your body, I guess, has felt that feeling and, like, it's done now. You feel something from it every time, I think, but it's just not that like initial thing, but you're searching for that
same high
every single time. Yeah.
And that's why people overdose.
Yeah. And, yeah. Because you become more tolerant to it. So you need more and more to get an effect. And that's what happens. Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
But Stan was like, I'm getting a divorce. And he told other people and maybe told her too, like, I'm going to leave her penniless.
Mm-hmm.
She's not going to get a dime from me.
Yeah.
After hearing all that, finding the evidence that they found, the police, as well as Stan's kids, Gary and Jerry, are convinced that Joyce had something to do with Stan's murder because there's motive there.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I don't think Gary and Jerry needed anything.
No.
Any help getting there. Like, they were like, obviously she did it.
We already knew that.
They ended up getting a court order to have all of Stan's assets frozen because they didn't want Joyce to have access to it, obviously. They think she's murdered him. So she said she, like, literally didn't have enough money to live at that point. Like, she had no money. And the police didn't have enough to arrest her. So she was just kind of
in limbo.
Yeah, bouncing around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Then an inmate doing time for another home invasion came forward with info on Stan's murder. Frank Zuccarello claimed he knew Joyce from the Miami nightclub scene. He said that Joyce had hired him and two other guys, Anthony Horocchiola, I don't know, and Tommy Lamberti to commit the crime. I'm always leery of these, you know?
Well, we've talked about it, I mean, how many times?
Yeah, because they talk to Joyce about it, and she's like, I don't know this guy. I've never heard of this guy. And then they talk to the other two guys, and they're like, I've never heard of this guy either. I don't know what you're talking about. We don't know who Joyce is. We don't know who Frank is. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So the police were like, okay, we're just going to have to wait then until we get more concrete evidence to arrest her. And it was like a couple years.
It was 2 years.
Yeah. And Gary and Jerry are flipping out because they're like, what's going on? Like, you're not arresting her. She totally killed my dad. Why are you not doing anything? And I feel like they were making the right move because they didn't have the evidence. But then all of a sudden, they're just like, well, we're just going to go with what we have. No new information came in.
No.
No new evidence came in. They just decide to roll the dice and prosecute her as is. With the testimony of somebody who we can't really know if they're credible. And it sounds like either the police did the work of trying to corroborate, like seeing if they could find a tie between them any other way, and they couldn't find it, or they didn't try to find it, and they literally just went on this guy's word when everybody around him was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And again, he's not incredibly credible. Like,
yeah,
he is a known liar and has been in prison for some pretty violent crimes, like home invasion, things like that.
Yeah. And obviously he has and I don't know. They didn't say specifically if he was going to get anything out of it.
No, they did.
Oh, they did. Okay.
So they arrest Joyce on October 4th, 1988, in a trailer that she was living in with her new boyfriend in Chesapeake, Virginia. They made a big point to say it was in a trailer.
In a trailer, yeah. It's like, okay, we get it. She's not a multimillionaire anymore.
Right. Like rags. No, riches to rags.
Yeah.
Rags to riches.
Yeah.
And the trial began on October 10th, 1988. Joyce was facing the electric chair in Florida for first-degree murder. It's kind of crazy to me that they, with what they had, they could have potentially taken her life with, like, not enough substantial evidence.
I can't believe how long the electric chair was
in effect. Use. Yeah.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah, to you me. Think of that kind of stuff as like, gosh, like medieval times almost. I mean, not yeah. that, you know, not that early, but
yeah, just like
1988.
Yeah, exactly. That's crazy.
But Lynn Esko, she's a family friend. She said that prosecutors were painting her, or I mean, the prosecutors were just painting her as like a monster. And she was like,
Ruella DeVille. Yeah. Jeez. It's a good thing I knew her. I would think, woo.
Woo. But prosecutors had a problem. The credibility of Frank, like we already said. And then Lynn Esko, same one who's woo. She said he got out of 411 years of jail to testify against her.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So he definitely had a super huge motive.
Something to gain.
To say what he said. And then, but like, why would you, so what, they were going to wipe his record clean for him saying, yeah, she hired me to kill this guy? And is he saying he did it?
Yeah.
So.
Wouldn't that implicate him as a murderer?
That's what I'm saying. So like, are you not going to give him a life sentence for that or something? Like, and he's dragging these other two dudes down with him? Like, mm-hmm. And maybe they did, I mean, maybe they did do it, because obviously the two guys have every reason to be like, I don't know who that is. But
they don't have fingerprints. They don't have even shoe prints from what I gathered. And this is only a 30-minute episode, like we've said before in all of the previous episodes. They are not long enough to give us some really detailed evidence.
Yeah.
But you would think that they would have, if they found like the smoking gun.
Yeah, they would have mentioned
it. Yeah.
Or if they found clear evidence that Frank had interactions with this Anthony and Tommy any other time, or if they had evidence that Joyce had phone calls with them or had met up with them or something. Like, if they could find somebody else that says, yes, they knew each other. Yes, we all were in, you know, the nightclub scene together. Like, we used to go party with them or whatever it is. They would have mentioned that.
Well, and Frank said that he and Joyce met at a restaurant, and she had drawn him up a map of the house and said how she'd have everything set up for the crime. And after they shot Stanley, they were supposed to leave the gun and she would dispose of it. Where's the map? Where's the, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And where's your leftovers from the restaurant?
What a dumb plan to leave the gun and then she's going to dispose of it and she literally just like moved it from here to right over there.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing there?
Like, it's the perfect crime. No one will find it.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to put it in the front yard.
Yeah. They never check the front yard. Everybody knows that.
But here's the thing. As if everything else wasn't already the thing. Here's mm-hmm. the thing. The problem was that he said the murder happened at 2:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Charles Wetley, the medical examiner, put the murder closer to 5:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm. They also had the issue of the tissue.
Oh, I like that. Tissue issue.
Yeah. So here's the tissue issue. They said that Joyce had used it to clean the gun off, but the defense said the gun residue came from Stan's body.
Isn't that the same?
I mean, like,
they're just saying, like, what happened in the waste basket was, so prosecutors are like, oh, she used this to wipe the gun off. And then defense is like, no, it was just when the gun was shot, it just sprayed on it. How do you, I mean, how, you can't prove either way, right?
No, you can't. Yeah, you can't prove that Joyce is the, but I mean, they said that it had her mucus on it. I don't know, but I don't know that that still proves that she's the one that wiped the gun off. And also, it's just super gross because either you use this to clean the gun off and then you blew your nose in it.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. It already has been used to blow your nose, and then you pluck it out of the garbage and use it to wipe a gun off. But if that was the one that was used to wipe the gun off, then how come no mucus got onto it?
Right. I don't know. None of this makes any sense.
No, it doesn't. Okay. So here's the thing.
Here's the other
thing. Here's another thing. Yeah. So the police talked to some neighbors that had come forward, and one of them said that he had a house guest the night that the shooting occurred, and they heard the gunshots, and they said it happened at about 2:30 in the morning. And they're like, well, okay, how many shots did you hear? And they said 4 shots, which is right.
Right. But then they were like, and what kind of gun was used?
And the guy's like, I'm so glad you asked. I am a trained weapons expert in the military. It was, I know for sure, a .38 revolver. So that's how they're putting that .38 revolver as the murder weapon. No ballistics. Which, why wouldn't you just test? I mean, they had ballistics testing then, didn't they?
I would guarantee that they had ballistics testing. They had 4 bullets.
Yeah, that you can test that.
You would think. And it's just so crazy. Now, I am not a trained weapons expert. Can you just hear a gun fire and know exactly what type of gun that is?
I feel like maybe you'd be able to tell the difference between like
a shotgun.
Yeah, a shotgun and a revolver.
Sure.
But yeah, are you going to be able to tell the difference between a .38 and a .45 or whatever?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that seems very strange. Also, what I want to know is, are the police saying, just tell me what you heard?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they saying...
Are they leading the witness?
Yeah. Okay, so you heard shots at 2:30. How many did you hear?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear 4? Yeah, I think it was 4.
Did it sound like something like 4?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Do you think, in your opinion, it sounded like a .38?
Yeah. If you had to guess, was it a .38 or was it a shotgun?
Right. Yeah. You know? Well, okay. I guess I could call myself a little bit of a weapons, trained weapons expert, because I can tell the difference in somebody using a Magnum versus slaps only.
Yeah.
So.
That's true.
That sounds, I mean, I'm not trying to toot my own horn here, but I can tell.
Yeah. So we definitely know the shooter's slaps only was turned off.
Exactly.
At this point.
Exactly. Yeah.
Then they had another neighbor who was across the street said that they got home at 3:30 and they didn't hear any gunshots, but at 5:30 they heard broken glass and the alarm go off. But wasn't the alarm turned off?
Yes. But, well, okay, here's what I think based on that. So, Joy, aka Joyce, if this is where we're going with this, let's just go with me here. So, she had the crime committed, right? It happened at 2:30. Well, then she turns everything back on and she breaks the glass to stage it to make it look like a home invasion. And then the alarm goes off and that's when she calls the police to be like, oh my gosh, because she's frantic. You know, mm-hmm. like you hear part of the 911 call and she is very frantic on the call.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's all that I can gather from it. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Because there must be just this window of time where the alarm was turned off.
Okay. Yeah, so they can tell that it had been turned off. But why didn't they talk about the timing of that? Because if you can tell that it had been turned off earlier in the night, like those alarm systems, if it's that high tech, I mean, I know now they have it where, like, you know, it connects to your phone or whatever, and it's like front door opened at 2:30, front door closed at 2:35, or like whatever it is. So
someone breathed near your door.
Yeah. So yeah. It seems like you'd be able to know that it was turned off between 2:00 and 2:45, and then it was turned back on, and then it went off at 5:30-ish.
Right.
But they don't talk about that, so I don't know. So, okay, so there's all that. Now, the medical examiner, remember, put the death at about 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
Which is when Joyce hears the broken glass and all that stuff. Except that now that all these people have testified that they heard everything at 2:30 and all these things, and the star witness is saying, no, we did this at 2:30. Well, the medical examiner is like, wait a minute. Again, no new evidence, no new nothing. It's just I was looking back over it and I looked at some of the photos, and from the stuff I could see in the pictures, it definitely was 2:30 that he died.
Like, that's incredibly convenient.
In the middle of the trial, he's already testified to the 5:30 timeline.
Who are you supposed to believe?
Yeah. This is insane. How that was not a mistrial, I don't know.
Like, but they proceeded. They just kept going with it.
Yeah, they were just like, well, he reviewed some of it and he just... before he missed this, you know, these details in the photos of the crime scene.
That's your job, man.
Like, that's your job, yeah. And he did an autopsy. So is your autopsy result going to be more accurate than what you see in a picture? I would think. But yeah, so he changes it right in the middle. November 14th, 1989, the jurors deliberate. It took them 3 days, and they found her guilty. November 21st, the judge decided that Joyce would serve 25 years in prison, 25 to life. She has always maintained her innocence. She says that she didn't do it. Somebody broke in.
And she was very vocal in the Snapped episode about, like, getting a new trial, because she's like, you would think with all of this new evidence that they didn't allow in and all the evidence that, or the lack thereof, mm-hmm. that I deserve a new trial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she said that they withheld evidence that could have helped her at trial, so.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this on Killer Queens a lot, but you pretty much need a Brady violation or something like that to get a new trial. It's very difficult to get a new trial once you've been convicted.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to find something procedural that wasn't done properly, information that was withheld by the prosecution, something like that.
I feel like there's plenty of that in this case. But
I think so too. I mean, the fact that the medical examiner changed his testimony in the middle of the trial, Now, I think she did it, but I don't know. I don't think they proved it. And if you can't prove it with her, then how many other people are going to jail based on stuff like this that seems like prosecutorial misconduct?
Mm-hmm.
It just can't happen.
She tried to appeal her case, was denied. She was eligible for parole in 2014, and I looked it up, and a judge extended her release date to 2048 in June of that year.
Yeah.
So word on the street is she's going to die in prison.
Yeah. She's not getting out unless she gets a new trial and gets found not guilty. But
right.
Yeah. And Gary and Jerry inherited their father's multi-million dollar estate. And they said Jerry was like a local news anchor.
Mm-hmm.
She looked like it. She's very pretty.
Very pretty, yes.
Yeah, her teeth are perfect.
Her hair was great, too.
Oh, yeah, totally. So there you have it.
Some of them, it's like a slam dunk and you feel kind of good about it. Like, man, justice was really served. And it just doesn't sit well with me this episode. Like, it just, you know, I'm like, ugh.
Me either.
Okay.
Yeah, because it just, there's so much of a lack of any type of real evidence. Like, you can't convict somebody on a hunch. And if they had found any connection between her and the guys that this other guy says committed the crime, they would have said it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and they didn't. So it's very suspicious that they never could find a link between her and these people. And everybody says that they didn't know this Frank guy.
Mm-hmm.
And she says she didn't know him. Like, that's super suspicious. And he gets out of a ton of jail time by testifying.
I do wonder if he was, or if all of them were tried for murdering Stan.
Yeah, they don't talk about any of that.
Mm-mm.
So, I don't know.
There's no closure with this
case. No. I mean, I think probably his kids
feel like justice was served. Yeah.
Yeah. And if she did do it, I mean, she's where she needs to be. It's just, I feel like there's enough questions.
Yes.
I mean, that's a lot of reasonable doubt to me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Let us know what you think, though.
Yeah, let us know what you think. And, you know, we will, of course, catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.